Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 381 of Longbox Heroes. Todd and Joe here once again, just like we have been the previous 380 times. Todd, how are we doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm fighting snow with my snow fists.
Mm-hmm. Making Toddcasts, reading comic books, and fighting snow around the world.
That's right. I have a snowmobile called Snugger. No, wait. Tugger? I'm confused.
Tugger.
But it's a snowmobile, so you can't call it Tugger.
I have sometimes a friend of mine. Well, snowmobiles being the jet skis of the snow.
They are.
A friend of mine who is attempting to run on a political platform for president next year, that all the rich people who have jet skis are going to have them taken away from them and given to the poor people.
Oh, the old communism, jet ski communism.
Right, but just the jet skis.
Right. I do believe in one nation under jet skis.
Oh, he'll never listen to this, but he'll get such a kick out of this, that we're talking about this dumb nonsense. But this is the end of the dumb nonsense, hopefully, because we have got a jam-packed show here today. 2018 is going to be the year of this podcast, because we have a ton of news to talk about. Everything from Tom King's next projects at DC, Marvel kind of taking the last vestiges of another comic book company, through to the dealings with Disney, follow-ups to stories that we've done on past episodes, a jam-packed news segment, a little bit of con news this weekend, not a ton of conventions this weekend. I think they all knew the snow was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Digital sales and freebies, and our exclusive interview with comic book creator Jeff Lemire. Also, of course, what we read last week, what we're looking forward to this week. Todd's art attack, an update, I guess, on what's going on with movie and TV talk. And, of course, the announcement of the winners of our big Marvel Puzzle Quest contest.
Everybody wins. No, wait.
Just three people.
Okay.
Not everybody. If everybody wins, then nobody wins.
Then it would be the jet skis of Marvel Puzzle Quest, and we don't need that.
Right. So, getting into the news, as we've discussed, a ton of stuff to talk about, but I think the biggest story of the last 7 days has been the fact that Marvel is going to be doing Conan the Barbarian comics again.
Yes.
They had the Conan license for the better part of 30 years, from the 70s and there on, and in around 2003, Dark Horse took over the publishing of Conan comics, and now they are going back to Marvel. Marvel kind of teased this with putting some images out. Was it a Mike Diodato piece with Conan there with Logan and Thor?
Right.
And an Asad Ribic piece as well. And not only did this create discussion amongst plebs like Todd and I, but it also created a Twitter, I don't want to say begging war, but everyone essentially who works at Marvel just essentially saying, yeah, I want to write Conan. Give me Conan. I don't care.
I'm just going to say, I don't know, that Diodato does some nice work. I'm just going to say.
Sure, and I don't know. Sure.
Was there anybody who recently wrote like some wacky barbarian in a Secret Wars miniseries? Archon?
Right. Jason Aaron did in Weird World. Sure.
That's right. Maybe he could do what he did with that character and maybe write Conan. I don't know. I might read that book.
I say, well, Cullen Bunn, who's also at Marvel as well, was doing Conan at Dark Horse. So that would be a nice transition. Donny Cates was also throwing his hat in the proverbial ring to be a writer on Conan. I say, all of you put your pitches in and just have it as like a bunch of ongoing series with different writers.
Yep. You know who could write too? Isn't there somebody who is going to be writing a Domino book who has some Conan experience lately?
Yes, Gail Simone, I'm sure, has an idea or two.
Mm-hmm. Now instead of teaming up with Conan teaming up with one. This is the first Marvel crossover with DC in a while. Wonder Woman Conan.
Well, I don't think we retroactively.
I'm all for retroactively making this a Marvel DC crossover.
Well, so obviously we're having some fun here with what Marvel's going to do and what they could do with Conan. But, you know, a lot of other people have pointed out that with this whole purchase of Fox by Disney, a lot of those properties are coming over to the Disney umbrella. We talked about Aliens, of course. That's a Dark Horse comic book. People were pointing out that Buffy the Vampire Slayer is part of that as well. That's a Dark Horse comic book. And now Conan is officially coming back. I feel bad for Dark Horse, man.
The only thing I can hope is like that maybe they could start being like an Image or a Vertigo and start attracting creators, because they lost a big chunk of their of what they publish. Now, granted that the licenses aren't up, but I don't know if Marvel, like Disney's going to be like, oh, well, let them keep it or whatever, because it was like Star Wars, even though Star Wars is a bigger property, when, you know, Disney bought the rights, they're like, hey, we have a comic company, let them publish the books. So I'm really wondering if will Marvel start another like small Dark Horse like imprint to do all these titles, or will they just be like, you know what? These aren't worth our time. Let's pick and choose a few of them and throw them back. So I have no idea what will happen. I'm not the futurist I once thought I was.
Well, I'll say this. The Conan stuff isn't coming until 2019. So Dark Horse at least has until the end of this calendar year. But if you remember when they were losing the rights to the Star Wars in the month of December, they had that big sale where it's like, here's every single Star Wars book that we've ever published as a digital sale for literally 20 cents a book.
Right, sure. Get whatever you can because they're going out the door.
Right. This is our last chance to get anything that we can out of this property. But you also bring up a good point. With some of these other properties, of course, you know, the idea is going to be there that it can be made into a comic book by Marvel, which is the comic book publishing arm of Disney. But will it be made into a comic book? Is it worth the time and effort to hire on new people or give existing writers and artists and so forth additional work to do a Buffy comic, an Aliens comic, a whatever comic, just because you now own the license to it?
Right. And the thing is, like I said, even though they acquired it, the licensing, who knows how long the licensing goes for. So Dark Horse might have some of these properties for another year or whatever. We don't know. But then how many books? It's like DC saying, oh, we can only really do 52 titles and some mini series here and there. And we have our Vertigo imprint. How many books, like, to do that, would Marvel have to cut some of their line to create those comics? Because I don't see them expanding to, if just say they do 50 books a month at Marvel, we're going to do 70 books. And because if they could do 70 books, they would do more of their Marvel characters. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yes.
So I don't know what's going to happen, if these are going to be in limbo or, you know, or they're going to option them out. They're going to be like, it's much easier. But that doesn't seem like Disney's style to me. So we'll see.
It'll be very interesting. And, you know, some of the other properties that are out there, I always wonder why there are other publishers. There's a company called Joe's Books.
Is it yours?
No, it's not mine.
Okay.
That publishes a bunch of assorted Disney property comics.
Right.
And remember when Boom had a bunch of those ancillary, like, Muppets and those sort of things? And with the Disney purchase, a lot of those went over to Marvel, and then they did nothing with them.
Right.
And also, Bongo Comics prints the Simpsons comics.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But they also do SpongeBob and Futurama. Now, I know Simpsons got wrapped up in this. I don't think that SpongeBob, I'm almost certain SpongeBob didn't, and I'm kind of certain that Futurama didn't.
Well, I would doubt that. I think Futurama, who knows, because Groening might have had a sweet deal, because I don't know if you know this, they like him for saving the Fox network from years ago. So he might have had a deal that, you know, after that he could do no wrong. And like, maybe he owns Futurama. But otherwise, that's on Fox. And that, unless, because he would, he's the one guy I could see having a special deal. Otherwise, that gets folded into the, to the, to all the other stuff.
Right. And this is just another side news story that I wanted to bring up. We're talking about licensing, we're talking about rights and who owns what and so on and so forth. In the most recent previews, it was announced that Archie was going to be doing a Dick Tracy comic. And mm-hmm. they had a cover, they had a creative team, and, you know, whatever it was, right? Now, mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy movie. I will spoil this. It's not on my list of the whatever we're going to call our little movie thing that we're doing at the end of the month on After Dark. I'm sure we'll talk about that in After Dark this week.
Mm-hmm.
But the look and the aesthetic of it really felt like that Dick Tracy movie. Now, allegedly on the movie, there's an R-rated cut that exists, and I'm dying to see it. But, you know, it was a Disney property and everything else like that. So, where I'm getting to this is, it makes it into previews, it makes it into the solicitations, it has an artist, it has a writer, it has the whole thing. Well, just the other day, it was announced that Archie has to cancel the book because Tribune, the company who has the rights to Dick Tracy, mm-hmm. I guess let Archie on, or didn't let them know about a pre-existing licensing deal. That doesn't let them do the book.
Well, sure. Let's buy the rights to the thing we can't do.
Right. So Alex Segarra at Archie says, so this is not great news. We were very much looking forward to creating this book, but due to a mistake on the licensor's part, that won't be able to happen. I'm not going to say much else about this. Doing the book was a lifelong dream, so on and so forth. But the company Tribune, again, neglected to mention to Archie that there was a pre-existing deal that didn't let them do the book. They went ahead with it, and now the book can't happen.
Right.
Oh, that's boy.
That's crazy.
What a mess. How can stuff like this still happen in the calendar year 2018?
I don't know. Hopefully in 2019 it won't. But,
right.
You know, I'm Dick Tracy, you're Prune Face, Joe.
Oh, I'm Prune Tracy.
Whoa!
Lousy beatniks. Anyway.
Right.
These are references to The Simpsons, folks. I apologize. Out of context, I can understand to a new listener this may not make a lot of sense, just in a vacuum. Anywho.
You did say something in code there at the end, so.
All right. So, over the weekend as well, there was news. We always talk about some of our favorite creators on the show. We're going to be talking with one of our favorite creators a little bit later on in the show. But we're one of our creators, newest creators on the scene is Tom King. Currently doing Batman and Mr. Miracle over at DC. Seems like he's in that echelon of DC top-tier talent. So, it was announced over the weekend that he's going to be doing a project called Sanctuary. Now, it looks like it's not so much as a crossover, but it looks like it's going to be, you know, a change of the way the books are being published or the stories are being told, kind of. Okay. What did you get out of the announcement?
I think it's going to be something that he's doing that could slip into the books a la, let's just say it's a, you know, for people who have trauma, the heroes, someone to talk to, like counseling, a la Night Nurse for Marvel. If somebody gets hurt, you go see her, where it could, it's something he's going to do. I don't know if it's going to be like a mini series or something in one of his books that he's going to create characters that you will be able to use in your book. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Where it'd be like, oh, well, Nightwing, you know, lost someone, you know, tragically, and now he needs to talk about it. So if you want to do this in your book, you bring these characters in or whatever, or something like that. Like, that seems to be the working premise to me.
Right, so it doesn't seem like it's going to be, like, a big event, but as Todd mentioned, it looks like it's going to be this new wrinkle that's going to be added into the DC universe, kind of like Hyper Time was supposed to be, but more of a ground level sort of thing.
Right.
Again, whatever it is, I think it speaks a lot for what DC thinks and feels about Tom King, essentially letting him add this whole new concept, of course, which really could be like world-changing to DC into it. Now, the other question is when is this going to happen? Because, of course, you know, Metal is wrapping up here soon. Doomsday Clock is only like 3 issues into like whatever that, you know, 12-issue series is going to be. So it'll be interesting to see when and where this comes in officially. And then again, of course, where all the pieces he's been hiding in the current books has been.
Right. Because he's probably been laying the groundwork and we don't see it.
Right. Because we weren't aware to be looking for it.
Right. It'll all make perfect sense when we go back.
Yes. Now, this is something that Todd had actually tweeted about over the weekend. In regards to a report from the Ace Comic Con, you know, the Sheamus brothers who were at Wizard, they started their own convention thing, and I guess it was even a story that made the news that a guy had a bunch of rare, very expensive comic books stolen from him, right out of his, you know, right out of the box that he had him in while he was waiting in line to meet Stan Lee.
See, I thought it was he was looking at something and they disappeared. He put it on the ground next to him.
Now, I only read the news story. I didn't watch the thing that actually made the local news about it.
Either did I, but, you know, you got to keep your eye on your stuff, Joe.
Right, and you had mentioned that you will, like, while you're looking at things, you'll wrap your bag around your leg or something.
Yes, and it's funny because Josh was mentioning like that I taught him how to do it. Basically, I have a lot of rules at cons because I know people are dirtbags, Joe. And one of them is like your bag, someone will walk off with it. So I have the bag like you do, the shoulder bag, the satchel, whatever you want to call it, the man purse. I don't care. So when I'm looking at comics, I don't want it hanging off me because it's bumping into people. So I'll put it like, I'll lay the bag on my feet where I'm standing so I could feel it against my shins and my feet. And then I'll put my foot through the strap and wrap it around. So if somebody grabs that bag or fiddles with that bag, I'll feel it tugging on my leg. Now, granted, yeah, if you want to take a step over to the next long box or whatever, you have to adjust it. But I'd rather have that. I have my money in it. I have sometimes expensive books. I have this and that. You just got to watch. I've heard stories, this isn't the bag, but people in line for something or they're paying for something and they pull out a $100 bill and somebody will see it, just snatch it out of your hand because you're not looking and take off running. Me and Josh, who I was talking about showing him the bag, like if we're taking money out of our bag to buy something, I will literally say, I could see in front of me. Watch behind me that somebody's not walking up behind me because they see me going through my envelope of money. And like, these are the little things, like, I've never had anything happen to me, but I've heard a lot of horror stories. So I've just always, I always have my head on a swivel at cons. Always, always, always.
Maybe I'm too trusting, Todd.
You are.
I have the man purse as well, and as you, gentle listener, may know or may not know how these sort of things work, a lot of them are different. You know, what I'll do is I'll have there's like the two clasps on it that you can kind of like lock it, if you will.
Right. I will do that too.
When I am doing stuff like that, I will have the clasps locked. And I'll have the bag turned around, so the flap is, like, up against my body.
Right.
So, if I'm looking at stuff and I'm not, like, in direct contact with the bag, they would have to undo those two clasps and somehow, like, open it up while it, like, rubs against my body.
See, but, like, I hate that because if I'm looking at con stuff and you have that little, like, you have tables, you're in between two tables, it's on your side, and it's more towards your back because you can't have, as you're lean, you know how you lean over a long box to look at stuff?
Right.
It pushes the bag behind you. Now, when people are trying to get around you, the bag is getting bumped and jostled, and it's not so much that stuff is going to get stolen as if you have anything in there, God only knows if it's going to get busted or broke or wrecked.
That's
so
a good point.
I put it on the floor in front of me. Usually there's something under the table. There's some room. So to me, it's more of a comfort, also safety issue.
Gotcha. Well, at least now you know if you see us at a convention how to steal our stuff.
That's right. We're giving away the goods here on the show.
Right. Speaking of the goods, and it seems as though over the weekend, Ollie's bargain outlet stores were flooded with DC comic trades for pennies on the dollar. Now, I was a little busy this weekend, preoccupied with various family and sundry things, so I didn't get a chance to go, and I think by the time I would have had a chance to go, they were pretty much cleaned out. But Todd, did you get a chance to peruse any of our local Ollie's stores?
Yeah, I did. I got to go, and they had a pretty decent collection at the local one that I was at, but they had nothing that I really wanted. So I'm not one of those like, oh, well, they have a cheap trade of a Geoff Johns Justice Society. I'm like, I love Justice Society, but I have the issues, and well, why would I just buy a cheap copy of issue 6 of the trades if I don't have 1 through 5?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get like, oh, I can go find 1 through 5, but it's like, I have the issues. There was a couple of things that tempted me. There was like the Archie Goodwin Manhunter by Walt Simonson art that they had. I have a copy of that, but this was like a nicer copy. I was like, I should pick it up. But I thought it was stuff that was liquidated from Diamond, because I know a lot of retailers were getting emails that were like, here's a lot of DC stuff that we have that here, like this week we're doing A through C. And this is what we're liquidating. And then we're doing D through F. And then they were just doing it that way. And even like a couple of sites were putting up what you could order from your local comic retailer cheap. And a lot of them, you know, retailers pick them up for their discount tables and everything like that. But at talking to our local retailer, this wasn't the same thing that they had. These books weren't on, there was a few crossovers, but I don't know where Ollie got all of these books, that they're just weird stuff that were at, you know, issues. The one big thing that they did is they did have volume 1 of Justice League International by Keith Giffen and Kevin Maguire and DeMatteis, and the Fancy Gentleman picked one up on somebody mentioning it to him that he should.
Right. So my question about this, as you had mentioned, it seems as, you know, you always hear stories of Marvel unloading any sort of overstock of stuff, and we'll get a little bit into that here shortly, directly to the retailers. This is the first time such a bulk unloading of product was done at a store like this, you know, an Ollie's, a Big Lots, or, you know, a bookstore, or whatever it was. It seems odd as though that they would take this tact. I guess this is the stuff that they couldn't pawn off on the retailers?
I don't know, but I have seen other... Now, at Ollie's or something like this, this is the first time I've seen something this big, but I have seen discount stuff at Ollie's that they, you know, before. Like, one of the big ones is the Marvel Dark Tower hardcovers, is they printed up so many of those. So many of those that they were giving them away, like, to everybody. Like, I could tell you stories, but I know some, like, with the retailers that it would be like, hey, if you buy one of these, we'll give you a copy of Dark Tower with every copy you buy. Yeah, it's that. That's how many they had printed up and were laying around. And I've seen, like, Ollie's have multiple copies of those Peter David Dark Tower comic hardcovers.
Sure.
So it's happened before. But this is the first time I've ever seen DC on such a large scale do it. Marvel does it a lot more. So, as I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. I'll have to. It's been about a week since this has happened, almost a week. I'll have to see if I have time, you know, weather permitting, to run by my local Ollie's and see what's left.
Right. Probably not.
One Talon trade or something.
Yeah, or some of those like weird showcase black and whites that nobody really wants.
Mm-hmm. I would pick those up when they would put stuff that was weird or hard to get, you know.
Right.
As I was having problems filling in my complete all appearances of Ambush Bug.
Right.
They put that out, and I ended up getting that.
I've got a few texts from people like, "Hey, I'm at the Ollie's, blah blah blah, far away from me, not the script." Granton one. Do you have the Captain Carrot showcase with all that? And I'm like, yes, I do. I'm like, you don't have to pick it up for me. So that's one that I know is there.
So if you've got an Ollie's in your neighborhood and you're looking to get a bunch of stuff super, super cheap, I don't know, give it a whirl. You never know what you can find.
Mm-hmm.
While you're getting copper pans and terrible lawn furniture or whatever else they sell at Ollie's.
I almost picked up some air fryers there. No, they had to get a toaster oven while you're there.
Oh, you know, not as a spoiler, or just kind of retroactively, I guess, with our Christmas gift exchange this year, I almost got you a toaster oven.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
I managed to. It's funny because I picked one up during the Christmas run with a bagel setting.
Oh, boy.
I was out getting gifts, and I went into Lowe's to get something, and they're like, hey, here's a cheap toaster, and I'm not happy with it, but because for one thing, for the way they have the crumb tray set up. I know, wait, Joe, I know. All right, calm down. You know how you get a crumb tray and you slide it out so you could keep the toaster oven on the counter? This crumb tray is a trap door. You have to open it, and it's on hinges, and it flops down.
Ugh.
Like, what am I supposed to do with that?
That's a horrible design flaw.
Yeah, like, take it over the sink with it, you know, still plugged in over my water. I don't need that.
Terrible. Well, I hope you find a much better toaster oven.
Right. It was cheap. It'll probably conk out in 8 months.
There you go. So just some follow-ups to a couple stories that we've discussed in the show just from last week. There was the concern in regards to Marvel, and we talk about their overstock, of course, where they will give retailers a few months after the release on certain variant covers an option to buy them again without having to meet certain ratios or criterias, but it's months after the fact that it's a lower price. It's just a way of them getting rid of stock. They almost did that with the Marvel Legacy lenticular covers, and within 24 hours of them saying we could do it, they took it away. But some retailers were seeing that they saw in their diamond invoices that it would just say surprise free variant.
Mm-hmm.
With no charge or no anything else like that. And obviously the question is what stores are going to be getting them? Was this another glitch? Which ones are you going to get? How is it being determined? I don't know what's going on over at Marvel when it comes to the distribution of stuff.
All I know is I'm all lenticulared out.
Mm-hmm.
I am. I can't do any more lenticular anytime soon.
I hate saying it because I already said it once at the top of the show. If everything lenticulates, then nothing lenticulates.
That's right. I've heard. Yeah, I heard that before.
Just one last news bit before we move on with the show. We had mentioned a couple weeks ago that the Monster Energy company was suing Marvel or was attempting to take them to court over a trademark issue with their Monsters Unleashed comic book, since part of their marketing campaign for Monster Energy is Unleash the Beast, and they feel as though the Marvel comic book named Monster Unleashed, Monsters Unleashed, would cause brand confusion in the marketplace. So Marvel attempted to settle this outside of court by offering to them an amendment to the trademark, saying, you know, hey, we do this for stories and artwork and so on and so forth, which is different than, you know, whatever it is for your delicious soft drink. That's what Marvel is pitching back to them. But somebody had pointed out, you know, that they're still kind of, you know, looking to agree upon what sort of verbiage is going to work best for everyone. But Marvel is fighting very hard to keep this trademark for what is categorically their worst selling book.
Yeah, but it's Marvel is owned by Disney, and they have lawyers on retainer, so they just need to use them. You're paying them anyways.
I guess.
So heck with it. You know?
I don't know. This seems like spending a nickel to make a penny.
Well, let me ask you a question. Years ago, if someone had said, you know what? Let's fight. Let's say Monkey Milk was making a Rocket Raccoon drink.
Oh, boy.
15 years ago. wouldn't you have said, what are you even fighting over that IP for?
Okay.
Well, now, who knows where Monsters Unleashed will be in 10 years? There could be, that could be wave 10 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Right, and again, obviously, you say that, you bring up a point. Maybe Marvel has something in wave whatever where they need to keep that IP of the Monsters Unleashed viable, so when the movie or the TV show or the kids' cartoon or whatever it is comes out, that they don't have that lost, then that might very well be what it is. I don't know, it just seems like they're working kind of hard over nothing.
But Joe, even if they don't have anything planned, it's their thing that they don't know what it could be in the future. So they'll fight for it.
I guess. I don't know.
That's the way I look at it. I would. Hey, I'm fighting for Gallifrey Birds or anything like that. Anything we come on here, I'll be litigious.
If someone lifts Gallifrey Birds from us, Todd, we got a lot of problems.
Oh, that is true.
Enough with the news and the recaps of past stories. There's conventions this weekend. Not too many, not too big. There is the Pasadena Comics and Toy Show that's happening this weekend in Pasadena, California. It's strange that all of these conventions are going to be happening in places where it's very warm and nice. Because the other one that's happening this weekend is the Victoria Comic Con in Victoria, Texas. That one has a few smattering of media guests, most specifically Stanley and Meredith from The Office.
Wait a minute, did you say Stan Lee and Meredith from The Office?
No, Stanley from The Office.
Okay, just making sure.
A lot of nickel talk on this show, because, you know, remember how many Stanley Nichols go into Schrute Box? You ever watch The Office, Todd?
Yes, I watched that. It's one of my... This is art. This is the best art of all the art.
Good show. Didn't stick in my head as much as other shows, so I think that says a lot about that show.
You're just mad that you didn't get up the stadium to see all the characters when the show got canceled.
No, but I did have people who went and brought stuff back for me.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I actually had work that day.
Oh, boy.
Super secret science work, yes.
That's more important.
It absolutely
So you
is.
Were in the office while they were at the office thing.
That's and my sucks. Office is allegedly near Scranton.
See how it all works out?
Yes. And also at the Victoria Comic Con is five-time sports entertainment champion Booker's T. I don't know what cute name you know him by.
All I know is he's the guy who sings Green Onions.
Different Booker T, but I'll let that one slide.
And the MGs, that's right.
So the links to this will be over in the show notes with this episode, as will the link to the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com and soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where anytime any of these shows go live, even if you accidentally publish the show when you actually meant to save a draft of it, it'll go up on the site, especially if I'm by my computer and I see it happen. Or if you appear in some other show, just let me know and I'll put it up on the site. Other people have threatened other shows in the past. Who knows what'll be coming in the future of the Soon To Be Named Network? The only way to know is to bookmark soontobenamednetwork.com or soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. I'm not going to list all the shows. We do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Some digital sales, a couple holdovers from last week. The Archie sale is still going on, Abstract Studio, Archaea, IDW sale is going on still. Marvel is having a sale on Excalibur books, you know, the British X-Men, essentially.
Right.
DC is having a sale on, it's called the DC Sale on Infinite Earths. So it's a bunch of their crisis-y sort of stuff on sale. You know, Infinite Crisis, Identity Crisis, Final Crisis, Zero Hour kind of slips in there as well. The one I want to point out to you, dear listener, is one of our all-the-time red-letter picks, anytime that it comes up on a sale, is Secret Six. Well, Secret mm-hmm. Six is not part of the sale, but Villains United is, which was essentially the precursor to the Secret Six book by Gail Simone that we all know and love.
Right.
And a lot of times when they'll do the sale on Secret Six, they won't do Villains United. But not only is it the six-issue miniseries of Villains United, it's also the one shot that they did a couple months later.
Right, around the Infinite Crisis ongoing. They did with the four of them, like OMAC and what was the under what was the mystical one? There was a mystical one. But yeah, they did all specials somewhere
right,
in the middle.
Right, Day of Judgment, Ran Thengarian War, all of those are right. included in this sale. But I only point out the Villains United one because of the Secret Six tie-in.
And I remember seeing all those four miniseries, and I'm like, oh, Mac, I've heard of that. All right, this one has all the mystical characters. Ran Thanagar. All right, I know those two things. What's this Underworld or this Villains United? That's not going to be anything good. And well, it turned out to be the best one, man.
Now, I will say this, and me being the collectory, whatever I am, while they do have the one shot that came out afterwards for Villains United, they mm-hmm. do not have the secret files for Day of Vengeance that came out.
Oh, no.
And the OMAC miniseries actually had an issue that tied into Wonder Woman, and it's actually a pretty key issue.
Yes, it is.
And that's not included in the sale.
Ugh.
Right. Why am I not in charge of putting these sales together?
Oh, my God. Don't start them up. Next, you're going to start talking about trades that were never put out. And ugh.
Now, that was a week or two ago.
Yeah, but it never stops with you.
No, it never does stop. So the other sale that's going on, Dark Horse is having a sale on a bunch of their... They're calling it a Dark Horse Spotlight sale. And it's kind of just like a hodgepodge of more recent-y stuff. Umbrella Academy, single-issue stuff. Here's this Grindhouse thing. Here's this thing called Zodiac Star Force. But I would be remiss, especially leading to what's happening in the next segment here, that they have the first trade of Black Hammer for $5. Or if you want to do the single issues, you can get the first 6 issues for $1 a piece. Obviously, trade for $5, which is 6 issues individually for $1 a piece. You're better off getting the trade, collects them all. But hey, it's a Jeff Lemire book, it's great, and it's on sale, so definitely check that out. And we're going to go right now to our interview with the aforementioned Jeff Lemire. We're going to get into a bunch of different topics about some of the books that he's reading and writing, rather, drawing, and a book that he's reading here as well. So we're going to go to that interview right now. And a little bit out of the ordinary here for Longbox Heroes, we have a special guest with us, and a very special guest at that, writer of so many things, too many to name, from Marvel, Image, DC, Valiant, his own self-published stuff as well, Jeff Lemire, here with us on the show. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
So, obviously, you're here to talk about Gideon Falls, which we talked about on the show last week, loved it so much. The artist on that with you, Andrea Sorrentino, right?
Yeah, Andrea Sorrentino.
Andrea, yeah. Yes. A lot of pronunciation and name talk before we went live.
Yes.
So, yeah. One of the first books that I think both Todd and I were introduced to you was the little bit of Green Arrow that you did for DC.
Yeah.
With Sorrentino. Now, you weren't one of the original launch folks for that. At the New 52, Animal Man was your book, which was really where I think, you know, you came to prominence, at least in my... How did the Green Arrow assignment, I guess, come about, or pitch,
yeah, well,
or what have you?
Yeah, I was involved with the New 52 stuff. I had done, like you said, I did Animal Man, and I did Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. I was working on those two books, and they were both pretty successful, and I guess from there, I just started talking to DC about doing other projects, you know, and I can't remember, the timing's a little, it's hard to remember what year this all happened, but I do know I was at a convention with Dan DiDio, and we were talking about possible books, and he mentioned he really wanted to do a change up on Green Arrow, because that book hadn't really taken off. They had tried to, you know, like all the stuff in New 52, they tried some new stuff with Green Arrow, and it hadn't really landed, you know, which is gonna happen when you try 52 new books, they're not all gonna click, but that one just wasn't really clicking, and so they wanted to switch it up, and he asked me about that, and it hadn't been a character I really you know, I'm a big DC fan, but Green Arrow was never really one of the big characters that I liked, you know? So it took me a while to think about it, but the one Green Arrow run that I always really did like was the Mike Grell stuff. When I was a kid, you know, it was a bit harder edge, street level kind of stuff, and I thought there was a potential to make the series a bit grittier and a bit more serious and take it back to those roots, you know? And so to get back to Andrea Sorrentino, the artist, we had been discussing a number of different artists to come on the book with me, and Andrea had been working on a horror book for the New 52 called I, Vampire, which was getting canceled, and I just looked at his stuff and I saw someone who didn't look anything like your traditional superhero artist. You know, I loved his work, but it's not what you would think of when you think of a Justice League character, and I kind of thought if we could get an artist like him, the book would immediately stand out and be different and just not be your standard superhero book, you know? And also he really works with shadows and has a grittier, darker feel that I thought would suit the tone I wanted to try to get with my take on Green Arrow. So I talked the powers that be at DC into letting Andrea do that book. And then, it just really clicked and he and I really clicked. And I feel like he started to, I gave him a lot of freedom in the scripts to improvise and try a lot of things, and he kept getting better and better, and we were riffing off one another, and it just was it's one of those great collaborations that clicks. And then we of course took it over to, we both went to Marvel a few years later and did Old Man Logan there. We did like about a 20 something issue run on that we loved doing that. And it was when we were working on that, on the side, we were kind of discussing, you know, the next thing we do should definitely be a create our own book where we can create something all our own. And Gideon Falls sort of grew out of that.
Right. You mentioned about, of course, Andrea going with you to Old Man Logan. And you mentioned about the Green Arrow stuff. And I really like also the use of the colors in Green Arrow as well.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Oh, sorry. Oops.
Yeah, I was just I think some of that stuff started off in the scripts. I think in the original first couple scripts, I talked about isolating little details in the action and then having the colors sort of pop out in a different way. And Andrea and the colorist on the book worked together to sort of develop that little visual language. And that became part of the look of the book. So that was something, again, that fun collaboration of me and the artist kind of communicating and trying different things together. And that doesn't always happen, but when it clicks, it's really fun. And so obviously you try to, when you get those relationships, you try to work on multiple books together when you can.
I'm a big fan of his art. And I collect art. So if you could yell at him for me that he doesn't do his stuff on paper, he does it digitally. I'm just kidding. It just makes me sad that I know that he does most of his stuff digitally. I would love to have some of his stuff.
I talked him into doing something for me, but yeah, I'm sure he'd be very popular with the original art crowd, but he does most of the stuff digitally now. Yeah.
But I think it shows too, it probably speeds him up, and the look of it, he knows the technology, because it really shows. You can see some people who do digital stuff and it just doesn't translate well, but like between that and the coloring, like you said, it just, everything he does, and it just seems to pop off the page.
Yeah, his rendering and the way he draws figures, you can see the digital influence, but he's so imaginative in his layouts and his storytelling that it really counterbalances that. It creates something unique, yeah, for sure.
Now, I have to ask, it's similar in my mind, but different, because Green Arrow, of course, a member of the Justice League, Old Man Logan at the time, for a good chunk of the time that you were writing there, was the only Wolverine that was in the Marvel Universe.
Right, yeah.
How was editorial kind of with those two characters, of course, with, you know, we need Green Arrow here at this point, so don't go too crazy with him, or we need Logan, Old Man Logan in this instance, he's going to be debuting in... Because you did one of the X-Men books around that time as well.
Yeah, well, that made it easier.
Right.
Yeah, well, I'll answer each separately. You know, in terms of Green Arrow, I had a ton of leeway because, like I said, it wasn't really working. And when something isn't working, they're more – editorial is a little more easygoing and letting you try things. And so we kind of took a different direction with the character, and that started clicking. So they kind of were kind of took their hands off completely and let us go. We didn't really need to worry too much about tying into the main Justice League book or anything like that. They were really good about just sort of letting us have our own little stories off to the side of that stuff. And in terms of Logan, that was a lot easier because I was writing the one X book that he was also a member of, so I could it was pretty easy for me to coordinate with myself, and I didn't have to step on anyone's toes. But again, for the most part, they were pretty open to me using the solo Logan title to sort of set the tone and the pace and set the sort of the character psychology and everything up in that. So people were kind of following my lead on that. So yeah, so in both cases, it was a very positive experience.
You mentioned about when a book's not doing well, you know, editorials kind of open to some crazy pitches. There was a time where the word in the comic industry was everyone had like that Doctor Strange pitch. And this was before, you know, Doctor Strange was in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it is what it is today. Who was your one crazy pitch that you always bring around that not to give it away, like, because obviously one day I'm sure you hope to have it happen, but what's like the crazy pitch that you've shopped around that everyone's just like, they've rejected it every time?
Yeah, I don't know if I've had one. I've been pretty lucky, you know. I haven't really had anything that I was really in love with that I pitched that didn't go through at this point. So I've been kind of blessed in that way that I've had a good track record. So there haven't really been those things, you know. There was one... I pitched an Adam Strange thing who I love right before the New 52, and they liked it, but that was, like I said, the New 52 was happening, so it was kind of bad timing where there was no point in launching a new Adam Strange book 2 months before the universe was going to be rebooted, you know, so that didn't happen. But then I ended up using a lot of the ideas from that in a creator-owned book, so it all, you know, you kind of, the things that don't work out, there's always salvage jobs you can do on them and take things from them and turn them into your own stuff or add them to things you're working on.
Now, one has to wonder that if some of those ideas, as you mentioned, that get pitched and maybe don't end up getting used somewhere, you know, for a specific character, maybe they end up moving, as you mentioned, to a creator-owned thing, and I would have to assume that a lot of that stuff maybe ended up in Black Hammer, which I love.
Yeah, you know, that's different, actually. Black Hammer was more... it wasn't ideas that I had that I couldn't use at Marvel or DC. It was more like... I came up with the book Black Hammer a long time ago, back in, like, 2006 or 2007 or something, when before I had ever worked at Marvel or DC. And at that time, I didn't think I ever would work at Marvel or DC. I just thought I'd always be doing indie comics. And to me, rather than Black Hammer being a collection of pitches that didn't work, it really was my love letter to all the superhero stuff that I loved growing up and all the characters that I loved. So I came at that one from a different point of view. It wasn't so much a recycle job as me, really just sort of paying homage to the things I love and the characters I love and sort of mixing two or three characters that I love together into something new and having fun with my own little superhero universe there.
Right. You know, you definitely feel like here's your Shazam analog and here's your Martian Manhunter analog and here's all these other little things. But then it's also the personal relationships that I think that makes Black Hammer so strong, whether it be, you know, amongst each other or the predicament that they're in. And currently, it's broken up. You have the miniseries right now, the Dr. Frankenstein one.
Right, yeah.
And then that's leading into, Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows?
Yeah, so the main Black Hammer story, which Dean Ornstein draws, Dean needed some time to catch up, so we took a little break. We ended that series at issue 12, issue 13, and we're going to relaunch it in April with a new number one, and we'll continue where we left off. But in the meantime, I've been working on, like you said, a few different miniseries. You know, the fun of creating your own superhero universe is that all of a sudden you start to get all these other ideas for other characters that you love that you can play with. So I had all these other ideas building up, and we decided to expand the world sort of in the way that, I guess, kind of like Mike Mignola, what he did with Hellboy, where he had the main Hellboy book, but then also a number of BPRD and Abe Sapien and all these other things. So yeah, we're doing a Dr. Star miniseries with Max Fumero will come out soon, and the Sherlock Frankenstein one is coming out now, and then there's a couple more that I'm writing at the moment, so the world just kind of keeps expanding.
I said Dr. Frankenstein, Sherlock Frankenstein is, you know, more the villain side of everything, and Black Hammer's daughter doing the investigation into it. Now, I guess, you know, you mentioned Dean needed some time to catch up on the main book, and you saying that this is a book that you've had in mind going back, you know, some 10-plus years. How far out, like, do you have an end in mind for this, for the Black Hammer universe?
It's interesting. I started writing the book in 2014. Like I said, I've been developing the idea for a number of years, but I actually started writing it for Dean in earnest around 2014, and I'm fairly quick. So I actually have written the entire main Black Hammer story at this point. I don't want to say how many issues it will be. We still have quite a bit left, but I'm about 2 or 3 years ahead of Dean on.
Wow.
So I know where it's going to end, and then now that that main story is sort of locked in, now I'm starting to go off on tangents and do these miniseries and expanding the world. So I don't see the Black Hammer universe ending anytime soon. I think there's going to be a ton of stories to tell within it for a long time. But the main story about the heroes on the farm, I do have an ending in mind. Yeah.
I want to know, but I want it to go on forever. I really do, because it's such a good book.
I love the character.
I remember when it got, I guess it got delayed initially on I think Dean had some health issues or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just, I'm glad that you're giving him the time. You know, a lot of people are big on that main story, having the same creative team throughout, you know, whether you talk about something as far back as Watchmen or even something like, you know, Ex Machina, you know? And then you have the side stuff where you have the different artists and the different representations, but it's not such a far off take of what the main book is, both in look and style.
Yeah. Well, I consider Dean a co-creator of that main story. So in my mind, there's no one else that can really draw it. So, it'll be worth it. It seems like a long wait now for people who are anxious for the next chapter, but when it starts coming out again, it'll be definitely worth it. The new stuff looks great.
Right, and you mentioned new stuff, of course. You know, there's one other question about old stuff that I have to ask you about.
Yeah, you can, whatever, yeah.
The Thanos book at Marvel. I think this was right as you were about to start it. You had given an interview with CBR, and in the interview, you know, you said that, you know, there was talk of how, you know, and this is something that everybody in the world thought as soon as all the acquisitions between Marvel and Disney and Star Wars and all that stuff sort of comes together. And, you know, you toyed with the idea of them figuring out a way to do a Marvel and Star Wars crossover. But you said in the interview that the idea that you had for Thanos was going somewhere, that the first arc would be leading into a massive universe-shaking story. Now, I love the book. You know, it's sad to see you go. I'm still enjoying it now, with Donny Cates taking it over.
Yeah.
Did this pitch, was it going to be like a crossover? What was it going to be?
My original idea for the run was a lot bigger. You have to forgive me, it's been like a year and a half since I worked with Thanos. I think somewhere around halfway through Thanos, Mike Diodato, the artist, was assigned to a different book, and I kind of lost some steam when they moved him. I felt like we had something really good going, and it kind of took the wind out of my sails, you know. And at that time, I was also a little burnt out on stuff. I was doing a lot of X-Men stuff and I was doing Thanos and a whole bunch of stuff, and I kind of burnt out a little bit and just needed to cut down on some of the work for hire stuff. And so with Mike off the book, I think I just sort of abbreviated my plans, but I think I originally had this big idea where when Thanos lost his powers, he would have to team up with the Marvel Universe to get them back from his son who had the Phoenix Force, which I still kind of ended up doing that, but in my mind that would have been a much bigger, huge, just like Thanos teams up with all the superheroes to take on Phoenix kind of crossover huge thing, and it kind of got boiled, you know, kind of watered down a little bit and made a bit of a smaller story.
I still thought it ended up being a really good story with, like, that ragtag group that ended up having to go and help Thanos with Star Fox and all those sort of weird characters.
Yeah, in the end, it might end up being better. You never know. Sometimes you want to do these huge crossovers, but they're not always they don't always end up being as good as you think they're going to be. So sometimes doing a smaller, more intimate story like that might end up being better anyway, and I enjoy doing those. So, you know, I think I still ended up telling the same, basically the same story I would have. It just kind of got a bit smaller in scope.
Now, you mentioned about the artist Mike Diodato being on the book. I know Todd is a big fan of Mike Diodato. Are you at the point in your career where you get say on who you would like as an artist when you get a book like that? Whether it be at Marvel or, you know, DC, obviously at Image with Gideon Falls, you were able to bring Andrea with you to the book.
Yeah, well, when you're doing creator-owned books, I mean, it's a whole different thing. The books come out of your relationship with a certain artist or whatever. So that's, but at Marvel and DC, it really depends on the project, you know. Sometimes they already have an artist in mind. Like, I think Axel Alonso called me and he already wanted Dio on that book. So I was not going to complain about that because I think Mike's awesome. So, but then there's other times where you do have conversations. You know, I think I remember, let me think of the different books I worked on there. When I did Hawkeye, there was a lot of discussion about who different artists that they could ask to do Hawkeye with me. And Ramon Perez was a fellow Canadian and Torontonian and whose work I really loved. And when his name came up, I went for that for sure. So sometimes it's open for discussion and sometimes they have people in mind, you know, it just depends on the book and on the project. Really, to be honest. So, yeah.
Now, as you're an artist too, so how often do you like figure maybe I'll do the art on this book? Does that happen a lot? And then you're just like maybe a little too much work, or
yeah, well, that's mostly with creator own stuff. I mean, my art style doesn't really suit the big superhero stuff, so that's never really a conversation. But most of my creator own stuff, Black Hammer, Descender, even Gideon, these are all ideas I had at one point that I was going to draw myself, you know, and then you just realize you can only draw one thing at a time and you have to make a choice. But if I don't love something so much that I want to draw it myself, it's probably not worth doing. So that's usually how I know those are good books. And then I start talking to different artists about them. But yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, I'd love to draw a lot more stuff, but, you know, unlike writing, you can really only draw one project at a time because it's so time consuming. Having said that, I would like to do, since Black Hammer is so near and dear to my heart, at some point I would like to do, I don't know, a miniseries or a graphic novel or something set in that world that I draw as well, just to kind of play around with some of those characters.
And I laugh as you say, like, you have to pick and choose. But we joke on the show that you're like the modern day Chuck Dixon. Like, back in the day, he'd have like 50 titles going on at once. You're very prolific. And like right now, my favorite book that you might be doing is Descender. I love that with Dustin Nguyen. And I elevator pitch it to anybody who, like, you know, I'm discussing it with, is it's kind of like Spielberg's AI meets like Battlestar Galactica. That's and cool. Yeah, it's just like the little robot company, like, who goes with the little kid and then giant robots show up. But like, where did you get this idea from? Because I really love it. And Dustin Nguyen, he's another one, as we talked about Sorrentino, his watercolor like look to the book and the colors are absolutely amazing. I absolutely love this book.
Yeah, well, you know what? Sometimes there are big, important reasons why you do a story, and sometimes there's not. Mm-hmm. In the case of Descender, it was me really, really wanting to work with Dustin, and he and I were both at DC, but we never got to work together at DC, and both of our exclusive contracts were coming up, and we started talking, you know, we would love to work together. Why don't we do an Image book? And the Descender, honestly, it was as simple as, well, what do you like to draw, Dustin? And him saying, robots. And you go, okay. And then sitting down for a couple of days and just coming up with something and then just slowly building it, you know, so it really was that simple. And I think, you nailed some of the influences for sure. I thought, I'm a huge, huge fan of that Battlestar Galactica show. The modern one. And then I always really liked aspects of AI, Spielberg's AI. I felt like like I kind of like half the movie, and I kind of like the movie I wanted to be, but it some of it didn't really click either. So there was like that was there, and just you know my love of Stanley Kubrick movies and other things, and you kind of mix them all together. And I was also really into when I was working on that story. I remember I was really into a lot of Jack Kirby 70s stuff at Marvel, and he did the Eternals, and he did 2001, like the he did an ongoing series. In 2001, Space Odyssey, where he created Machine Man. So all these things were kind of, you know, floating around in your head, and then you just sort of sit down and start making stuff up and having some fun, really. That's what it is, world building, and sci-fi especially. It's so fun to build all these different planets and alien races and all the politics and technology and everything. It's kind of a blast to sit down and do all that stuff and then have Dustin, like you say, draw it in such a unique way. It's really cool.
Yes, because every cover he seems to do, just like it just draws the eye to it on the rack. And has it been picked up for? Was it a movie or a TV show?
Yeah, Sony's developing it as a film at the moment. So there's a screenplay has been written, and there, I think there's a director attached at this point, but we're not. I don't think there's been any announcements yet, so I don't think I'm allowed to talk about that. But yeah, it's moving anyway. Slowly but surely, it's being developed as a film.
Fantastic.
So two other books that you have coming out here from DC. One, specifically The Terrifics. Now, when this was first, I think we first saw the teasers and that you were announced to be involved with this, I think over the summer last year. And I got such a Fantastic Four vibe just from the initial look and feel of everything. Is this your way of getting a chance to do a Fantastic Four book?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of like more of a funny tongue-in-cheek nod to the Fantastic Four than anything, because really beyond the surface similarities, they're completely different characters than their Fantastic Four counterparts, you know? So sort of the tongue-in-cheek way of like, oh yeah, this is DC's nod to Fantastic Four, but the book itself and these characters really are their own characters. I'm not writing them, you know, I'm not writing Metamorpho as if he's Ben Grimm, you know, I'm writing him as if he's Metamorpho, you know, and same with Plastic Man, is clearly not Reed Richards.
No, right, so, of course.
Yeah, you know, they all have their own vibe. So once you get past the surface kind of fun similarities and allusions to the classic FF stuff, it's really about these characters and what brings these, you know, the fun thing about the FF that I think everyone always responded to and what I did was, but it's a superhero family, you know, obviously. And so the fun I had with writing this book and have been having is, well, what happens when you take a group of characters who aren't a family, who don't have any reason to be together, but they're literally get stuck together. And then, you know, they probably can't really stand each other at first, but you slowly see them grow into this sort of surrogate family and kind of grow to be important one another's lives in different ways, and that there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with that. There is definitely some nods to Fantastic Four, and definitely the tone too. We wanted to do something that kind of harkened back to the classic Kirby Lee FF stuff. That sense of big sense of adventure and fun, and lots of big ideas in each issue, and you know, so. Sort of yes and no, I guess, is the answer. You know, I'm definitely not out just to write the FF, but it's a clear influence on the book for sure.
Now, just one question I have about it is, you know, this was one of those books where it's Jeff Lemire, it's a book that's coming out. Just tell me the title and the day it comes out, I'm buying it. I don't need to read the concept. I don't need to have anything. You know, I'm just going to get it regardless. But we have you here, so I'm asking. The name of the book is The Terrifics. Uh-huh. Is the team actually going to be called the Terrifics?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous. And I, you know what? I can't see Mr. Terrific. Of all the characters in the DC series, I can't see Mr. Terrific calling a team that he's leading the Terrifics. Like, he's just way too cerebral and serious for that. I think at one point in the book, I can't remember what issue it is, but Plastic Man makes a joke where he calls them the Terrifics, and they all kind of look at him like, are you serious? You know? So it's not really their name, but...
I was wondering, because again, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a spoiler or not. I'm like, I'm going to guess they're not called the Terrifics, but if they are, that would be hilarious.
Well, they make come to be called that by other people, but I don't think it's something they consciously, like, well, obviously I know it's not something they call each other, at least not for the first, you know, 7 or 8 issues. They're not calling themselves that.
Gotcha. Now, one of the DC book that's coming out, I think it's supposed to be coming out this summer. You would know better, of course, is the Inferior Five book that you're doing with Keith Giffen.
Yeah.
Just the pitch of this alone. If you had told me that this was a book that was going to be published, I wouldn't believe you. But here it is. It's a book that's taking place in the 80s in the DC universe. You're working with these characters with Keith Giffen. This is like a dream project for me to read, let alone for, I'm sure, you to do.
I'm a huge fan of Keith's. He's one of my all-time favorite artists and writers, you know. I'm a child of the 80s and early 90s, so Keith was like the man then at DC. He was like one of the main architects of the line back then, you know, and I was reading everything he did, and I would sit and copy his drawings from Legion, and you know, so I'm a huge Giffen fan, and so the chance for me to work with him now as a friend and as a peer and to write for him to draw is so cool. And then there's this whole meta element to the book for me where it's, like you said, the book is set in the continuity of DC Comics 1988. So in 1988, I was 11, and I was reading every DC comic, and Keith was writing half of them. And now Keith's drawing a book, and I'm writing it set in that time, in that continuity. So it's kind of bizarre, but it is a crazy book. When Dan Didio told me about it, I couldn't believe it was actually a real thing, you know. But we're doing it. Keith's drawing it, and it's been as fun as it sounds. You know, it's been we're working on it in a really organic way where I'm not writing scripts at all. It's just Keith and I will get on the phone. We'll talk through our idea for what's going to happen that issue. Keith goes off for a month or whatever and draws, and then he sends me the artwork, and it's usually about half of it's what we talked about and half of it's stuff we didn't talk about, and I have to come up with it. Have to make sense of it all. But that's like a really good challenge, and then he'll throw stuff at me and then I'll throw stuff back at him in the lettering that he maybe didn't intend, but he has to riff off that next issue. So it's this really organic kind of old school sort of way of working that it's been a blast. And I, as far as scheduling, I actually don't know when the book's going to come out, just because I think Keith wants to get a certain amount of issues drawn before we solicit the book. So we're going to kind of play it by ear there. But that is a book. I'm going to do some artwork for that as well. I'm going to do a 5-page backup story in every issue, starring characters from DC in 1988 that I'll be drawing. So it's really this bizarre, fun, weird little book that I can't believe is happening, but it is.
And Joe will tell you there's no bigger like 80s, late 80s guy at DC than me. I'm a huge Justice League International fan. Yeah. Keith Giffen, the whole run, you're right. He was the conductor of DC at the time. Yeah. But if you could just squeak in anywhere the greatest underused characters of all time, Rocket Reds, that would be that. I love them as characters.
Already done.
Oh.
I already drew them in my one way back. So there you go.
All right. See, I ask, it gets done. That's how good we are.
Yeah, it's fun. And the concept of the book, which we didn't really discuss, is that if you remember, of course you remember the one DC crossover called Invasion that Keith co-wrote actually back in 88, where the Dominators sort of in a sort of cabal of alien races invaded the Earth. That, so in our story, that has just happened, and we're kind of dealing with the aftermath of that. And it's a series of it's this group of kids who get together in this small town. All their families have kind of, their homes were all destroyed in the invasion, and they've all moved to this new small town in Arizona. And these 5 kids meet up who have all been sort of traumatized and affected by the invasion, and they become friends. And this town is a very strange town with a lot of crazy stuff going on. And that's sort of with the DC universe of 88 as the backdrop of all that. That's sort of the setup anyway, and from there we go to some pretty insane places with it.
Again, Todd mentioned before about how he would elevator pitch you know, descender to someone, just from what you're saying, this sounds like the elevator pitch would, for it would be something like Stranger Things meets the 80s DC Universe.
That is it. That is exactly how it was pitched to me. So.
There you go. So, yeah. Gideon Falls, of course, coming out in March. You were nice enough to get a copy of it to us so we could talk about it. I loved it, but again, I'm a sucker for your work. I'll admit it, you know. Where did this idea come from? And I guess how did you end up getting it at Image?
Yeah, well, it's a long genesis for this one, too. Kind of like Black Hammer, I'd come up with the idea for some of these characters. The main character, one of the two main characters in the book, is a guy named Norton who lives in this urban center of the city, and he's convinced that there is some sort of secret conspiracy or secret something going on, and that the clues for it he's finding in the city's trash. So he's hunting through dumpsters and back alleys and finding strange little pieces of trash and putting them together in his laboratory, and he thinks he's onto something big, right? But we also learn he has a history of mental illness, and this could all just be part of that, or he could be onto something. And then the other character is a Catholic priest who moves to a small town called Gideon Falls, and has to take over the church in the town after the previous priest was murdered. And he gets sort of drawn into this whole dark underbelly of this small town. And, slowly these two stories, it seemed completely, disconnected, connections begin to be made, and these two characters are drawn together. And the Norton character, the main character, is actually a character I've been playing around with for about 20 years. You know, I went to film school here in Toronto when I was, I guess this would have been like 96, 97 when I was younger. And, I obviously didn't end up pursuing a career in film, but one of the short films I made before I left was a film starring this character, this Norton character. So I'd come up with him way back then, and he's always kind of stuck around in my sketchbooks and in the back of my head. So when Andrea and I started talking about doing a book, and I knew Andrea wanted to do a horror book or something darker and more sort of a psychological kind of thriller, this character popped back up and I started building a story around him. So yeah, it's been around for a while. And in terms of how I ended up in Image, I think at this point, you know, aside from Black Hammer and the Black Hammer universe, all my creator-owned stuff is pretty much at Image these days. It's a good place for me. They give me total freedom to just do what I want, and I've kind of found a little home there, so it just seemed like a natural fit for it.
Right, and we haven't even gotten a chance to, you know, you mentioned your Image stuff, of course, but we haven't even gotten a chance to scratch the surface of the stuff that you're doing over at Valiant as well, and that's, you know, we kind of kid on the show a little bit that Valiant is really trying as hard as they can to get up there, as they say, to the front of the catalog in previews, you know?
Yeah, I have a love working with Valiant. You know, they're not a big company, but they're just such great guys. You know, Dinesh and Warren Simons, the editor-in-chief, they're just so wonderful to work for, and they really supportive. They give you these characters that they have, and they really let you treat them almost like it's a creator-owned book, where you can just really make it your own, and that kind of freedom is hard to get, you know. So when I took over the Bloodshot character 2 or 3 years ago now, it just gave me so much freedom that I was just able to build this whole mythology around Bloodshot and build this supporting cast. And then I became so invested in it that, you know, I've just stayed on and kept going and kept building. And, yeah, it's just a lot of fun to work with those guys. And it's fun to work in a shared universe like Valiant, where, like, unlike Marvel and DC, it's only been around for about 5 or 6 years, and they only publish about 7 or 8 books a month. So it's a much smaller universe, and it's much more contained. So it's a lot easier to work with all the other writers and be a part of the universe and make everything work together and kind of have fun with that aspect of it as well, the collaboration. So yeah, I really enjoy it. You know, I love working on Bloodshot at this point. I've been doing it for three and a half years, and I feel really invested in the character and his story, so.
I did like the, and you know, as I mentioned before, you know, the stuff that Valiant is doing, I think they had a contest where, like, the most recent #1 of Bloodshot came out, where they had the contest where if you correctly guessed how many people Bloodshot had killed, throughout the course of his run, you won some sort of, you know, prize pack or whatever it was. How involved with that were you?
I didn't even hear about it, so there you go.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's usually the PR people doing that kind of stuff. I just write it. But yeah, that's funny. I haven't, I wouldn't even know where to begin if I had to guess that myself, with how many people he killed.
Now, has there been any talk at Valiant with Bloodshot crossing over with Quantum and Woody, or vice versa?
We've never talked about that. No, we've done a few. The only crossover stuff I've really done with it, I've had Ninjak in the book quite a bit, and that's been really fun. But yeah, they don't really force that kind of stuff on you. Like, they don't, to boost sales or whatever. They're not big on doing the crossovers and stuff. They just kind of, like I said, they really let you build your own story, and they kind of hire people they believe in and let them do their thing and trust in it. So it's been super supportive there.
Now, again, just to kind of wrap things up, we've covered so much of, you know, what you've done in the past and what you're doing currently. Is there anything that we missed that you'd like to mention to our listeners, or any plugs or anything else you want to get out there?
I don't know. We really did. I think we covered all my books. The only book maybe we didn't talk about is I'm also writing and drawing a book called Royal City at Image, which is much more of like a slice of life kind of drama. So that's sort of the thing I'm drawing right now. But other than that, yeah, I think we really covered it all. I'm super excited about a lot of the new stuff, Gideon and Terrifics and Inferior Five. So it'll be a fun year when those start coming out.
Now, just so that we're not completely doing comic book stuff, what are you doing out? Are you reading something, watching something, listening to something? Are you a gamer? What are you doing outside of the world of comics?
I'm not a gamer. If I was a gamer, I would not be writing as many comic books as I write every month. You should know that, because I would never stop playing. So I've never let myself start playing video games, because I know it would be a bad thing for me. So yeah, I don't game. I guess my passions really, honestly, are hockey, because I'm Canadian, so of course I have to love hockey. So I play and watch hockey all the time. That's kind of my way of shutting off from comics. And, you know, I read a lot, so I just finished actually a really great science fiction series. If you're a fan of Descender, I think it would be something to check out. It's called, I don't know if you've heard of these books, but it's a trilogy of books called The Three-Body Problem, and it's by a Chinese author whose name I'm going to slaughter if I try to pronounce it. But they're really a really great kind of first contact alien invasion thing, but it's all very hard sci-fi. So it's all based on real physics and it's pretty fascinating stuff. It was really cool.
As a sci-fi fan, are you a fan of Doctor Who at all? Or
that's one thing I've never been able to get into. I've tried a couple times and just haven't been able to, it hasn't got its hooks in me yet. Yeah. I've not gotten into that.
That one of us only likes on the show, so I always ask that question every creator that I get.
It's something I want to love, but then every time I try watching, it just kind of doesn't click for me.
Gotcha.
I'm not even going to ask about it, you know, our kind of like separation of the show is Todd being a Doctor Who guy. I'm more of a pro wrestling guy.
Okay.
Not even going to bring that up. I'm sure, you know, I'm going to guess that you're probably not a fan.
No, it's not my thing, but I completely respect and support your love of it.
I was going to say, I have a friend of mine in the WWE who's a big Toronto Maple Leafs fan. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, well, there seems to be a lot of comics creators who are really into it. I know Jason Aaron's really into it. So, you know, it's not unheard of in the comics world to have that crossover with comics, for sure.
Right. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to be on the show with us. You know, be sure everyone listening, pick up Gideon Falls when it comes out. Pick up any of Jeff's stuff. And I also want to recommend, if you go to Jeff's website, it's Blogspot, right?
Yep.
And if you sign up for the mailing list, that's a really good thing to do to kind of be on the forefront of any stuff that he has coming out, you know?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I try not to abuse it, so I only use it when I have something new. And I try to give something that hasn't been released online yet, so I think I'll probably send out some Unseen Gideon stuff at some point soon.
Right, and that's kind of, you know, at the time that, you know, we were talking to set this up, I was getting the email from your mailing list about the, you know, the new preview pages, and then you're sending out for the preview, and I'm like, did I already get this? Did I already get the email? I'm like, oh, no, this is the mailing list one. Okay.
Nice, yeah. Cool.
All right, again, Jeff, thank you very much for taking some time out, and, you know, follow on Twitter, go to his blog spot, sign up for the mailing list, and buy all of his books.
Rocket Red. He's coming to
Yes. It's
for you.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Jeff.
All right, man. Thanks.
So again, thanks to Jeff Lemire for being on the show. Todd and I are both big fans of all of his work. And we mentioned a bunch of times during the course of the interview, anytime he has something coming out and his name shows up on something, you're putting money down that you're going to be getting a good product back.
Yes.
Speaking of good products coming back, let's get into the books that we read from this past week. Todd, I'm going to let you start with your pick from last week.
Which was Old Man Hawkeye number 1 by writer Ethan Sachs and art by Marco Chiacchetto. This is basically a prequel to Old Man Logan using Hawkeye, obviously. And it starts out with Hawkeye running protection for this the shipment of something. And as it happens, it gets attacked by the Madrox gang. And I'm not really sure how that works. I'm hoping to find out a little more about that, whether because he's one person still or it's multiple versions of him. Because they say a few things, but Hawkeye ends up missing with an arrow, and it sets forth in motion that he goes to see a doctor, and they're talking about how he's going blind, like he ends up in Old Man Logan, and if there's anything you want to see, you better go see it now. So he goes to see his estranged family, and he figures out that there's something that he has to do to take care of before he goes blind. And while all this is going on, someone finds the Madrox gang and realizes that maybe there is someone's doing some superheroing again. And in the Old Man Logan world, that's not something you want to do because the villains own their territories and everything. So they're looking into it. I was a big fan of Old Man Logan. I see a lot of the stuff, how this ties in to the book that I was reading. There's kind of, at one point, Hawkeye brings Logan an Xbox that he mentions that I remember them mentioning in the Old Man Logan original miniseries. There's some other stuff that pops up. And I think this is really tight with that original Old Man Logan series. And I was worried that, I was going to try it and not enjoy it. But because of that, it makes me want to read the rest of them and see where this goes, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And if you love the Old Man Logan original mini, I think you'll really like this too.
So I like this. I read it. I didn't know anything about it because it was just kind of off my radar a little bit. Because the Old Man Logan book kind of exists. And in my mind, I'm like, why do we need an Old Man Hawkeye? Didn't we more or less get his story in the original Old Man Logan story that was done by Mark Millar? Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, this is a prequel, which I didn't know going into this.
Right.
And I don't think the solicitations for this really popped this out, that say it's, a prequel to Old Man Logan. I think it would behoove them more to do so. You're already kind of aping the name with the Old Man Blank, why not say the prequel to the hit series, so on and so forth, really hammer that aspect of it home. But again, I'm not a marketing guy. I would have put the right key issues into my digital sale, but that's just me.
See, honestly, I knew it. I don't know where I read that it was, so I thought it was in the solicits. So going into this, I actually knew what it was. Okay. Somewhere along the lines, marketing got it right for me, so I knew what I was getting.
Right. Now, I'm not familiar with the writer Ethan Sachs. I don't know how much he's done or not done in the world of comic books. I think I'm just seeing here not much. It looks like he writes pieces for the New York Times.
There you go.
Yeah, it looks to be about it. But anyway, I think he did a good job with his first story here. Now, my only, and I don't want to say it's a complaint, I like Marco Chichetto's art. I've seen his art in a bunch of other stuff before. I think he did some Star Wars stuff.
Yes.
My only, I guess, lament, complaint, I don't know what you want to say, about the book, it was a little too bright for such a dark tale.
And it's not like it, like, affected the tone or made me like it any less or what have you, but I'm, in my mind, it should have been colored or inked a little bit darker.
You know what would be really cool, and this is going to sound stupid, maybe, is if over the 12 issues, it gets darker.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Like, as Hawkeye's losing his sight, you know, kind of a thing.
Yes.
I don't know. We could see, but I know what you're saying. But I remember Old Man Logan being a brighter book, especially, like, when they were out in the deserts and stuff like that.
Right, but I think the coloring, like, it was a lot of browns and it was a lot of whatevers, but I felt as though it was, like, darker. And the line of the ink was a little bit heavier as well.
Okay.
But again, didn't take me out of the book, but I just feel as though they should be clinging a little bit tighter to, hey, it's the prequel to the hit series, you know, the inspiration for that movie everyone loves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be as shilly and pluggy and funky Flashman as you can with it.
Wow.
Speaking of which, leads us to the other book that I was most looking forward to coming out this past week, and I'm sure Todd read as well, and that is Mr. Miracle number 6. Written by Tom King with art by Mitch Gerards. Now, this is the story of Mr. Miracle and Big Barda going through War World on New Genesis to face the High Father. Now, while they're doing this and going through all of these pits and traps and all this other stuff, they're having a very mundane married couple conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's being done to show the duality of these characters, that in this nightmarish hellscape where their lives are on the line, they can do it with such ease and aplomb that they could talk about redecorating their apartment
mm-hmm.
while doing it. That in and of itself would have been enough, Todd.
Right.
But there's a huge spoiler in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
A huge spoiler I should have seen coming.
Right.
And being a print reader of the book, I didn't realize it until I got to the staples in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I was more than halfway through the book, which was only about 2 or 3 pages before the actual reveal happens, before I figured out what was going on.
Hey, you want to know something, Joe?
Go ahead, Todd.
Guess where I figured it out.
Where did you figure it out?
Right at the staples.
Okay. It's not that I'm like, oh, I feel better now, but I think maybe the story was structured that way for everyone to figure it out at that point.
Well, that Tom King kind of knows what he's doing, Joe. Maybe that was his plan, to have you get it before Scott picks up on it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And again, we talk about this book every month when it comes out. It's a great book. I can't recommend it enough. You know, if a lot of times you feel that the New Gods stuff might be impenetrable on the DC side of things, or DC continuity might be too much for you, you really don't need to know anything more than what they give you in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you grasp it all or not, whether or not you pick it up and it sticks with you all or not, this book, at the end of the day, is the relationship between Mr. Miracle and Big Barda.
Right.
And this being, you know, in the solicitations of this as well, they say that this is the end of the first arc, and I know we had postulated how this book is going to be collected and traded and all this other stuff. I definitely think that they're going to split this up as 2 trades, 1 hardcover, an omnibus, and 1 more collection.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm wondering, because like I said, they did Omega Men, and they did... did he have anything else? No, but they did the Vision as 1. No, they did the Vision as 2, right?
They did the Vision as 2, and then they just had the hardcover, I think, came out either last week or this week.
Right.
Last week. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But the Omega Man 1 was definitely all 12 issues in 1 trade.
Right, and I think that was one, I don't know if it was originally solicited as 12 issues, but I know this is.
But you know what I'm thinking now, though, Joe? Hmm. Now that Tom King is the cash cow that he is.
Right.
When Omega Men was done, he wasn't all capital letters Tom King.
He wasn't capital just, T, you know, capital K.
Right, capital T, capital K Tom King. This is, you know, all caps before the title Tom King. So they'll probably milk it as much as they can. Now, you're probably right.
So, what was I going to say about this?
Sorry.
That reminded me, not so much as a news story that needed a full whatever, but the fact that Tom King was tweeting that, I guess, Marvel didn't give him a complimentary copy of the Vision hardcover.
Oh, how do you do that?
Well, I have an idea. And it might have to do with a lot of the other stuff that we talked about the last couple weeks at Marvel. And I might have to I definitely have to clean it up, and it might be difficult for you, the listener, to find this article, but I was listening to another podcast that was kind of talking about, like, all things pop culture year in review, and they got into the Marvel movies, which in turn ended up them talking about Marvel comic books. And I guess if you just put in your preferred search engine, DuckDuckGo or what have you, the top things that Marvel messed up in 2017,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a top 10 or a top 12 or a top 15, but the thing that you will come away with when reading it, you'll be like, oh, I'm reminded of four or five other things that didn't make the list. Oh boy, this is a rough year for Marvel.
Oh boy.
Right, which is the reaction I had. I'm like, oh, they forgot that. Or I'm like, oh, I completely forgot that they did this. And then that reminded me of like two other things that didn't make the list, you know? There's no honorable or dishonorable mentions, unfortunately.
Your anti-Marvel sentiment is showing again, Joe.
Listen, if you go back and you listen when DC was struggling and scraping and clawing, you know, we would kind of give them the business.
I'm unaware of any time DC did that.
DC's always been the number one top dog, a number one top of the heap.
That's right. You got to make DC look strong, Joe.
Oh, boy. I just can't everyone just have a nice game of it, and I don't know. Anyway.
Right.
That's what we read last week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. Every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put out the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you're keeping track of your books and how much you're spending on your books in the calendar year 2018, like Todd and I are this year, or trying to guess what your friend is getting, or most looking forward to coming out this week as well. Be forewarned, be forearmed, use the pull post as a tool for your good and not evil.
Right.
Todd and I are tied so far the calendar year 2018 with one correct guess apiece. I'm looking at Todd's list, and I'm going to guess the book he is most looking forward to coming out this week is Tales of the Rogues number one.
It is not.
Oh, my goodness.
It is Damage number one by Venditti, who is doing Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. And I'm actually curious to see what one of these new hero books is.
Mm.
Like, I want to see where they're coming from. Are they coming from the Metal Dark Universe? Like, are they new characters in the DC Universe? I'm very intrigued as to this will set the groundwork to if I pick up any of the other ones, maybe. You know what I mean? So. That's my take on this.
I'll be just like I said last week with Old Man Hawkeye, I'll be very interested next week to see how you think of Damage number one.
Right. Now, I'm looking over your list. I don't think it's the first DC Marvel crossover in a while, Wonder Woman Conan. Let's see. Is it Killer Be Killed 15?
It is Killer Be Killed 15.
Oh, wow. Look at me nailing that.
You know, obviously every issue just, you know, on top of each other of what's going on with the character. And it really kind of put the main character at the end of the last issue in a status quo changing sort of predicament. And I'm very interested to see what's going to happen to him this issue. Going and right. What the rest of the series is going to look like going forward.
Okay.
All right. So, Todd, did we... Oh, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the stuff that's over there at longboxheroes.com, which is everything that Todd and I have ever done, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, past pull posts, Todd and Joe have issues, anything and everything that we've ever done exists over there. If you're accessing it from your phone, it looks a little bit weird. But hey, everything's there if you need it. There's even tabs that can break everything out across the top. Also, speaking across the top, there's a little store button where you could purchase shirts or stickers with our fancy logo on it, made by our good friend DC Comics artist extraordinaire, Tom Derenick. Now, we actually had a shirt purchased this past week, Todd.
I know.
But the person who purchased the shirt did not include a phone number for me to call them.
Oh.
I did send them an email saying, hey, thanks for your order. Here's your tracking number. Can I have your phone number so I can call you?
Icky.
He did not get back in touch with me. Now, I do know that this person is having a lot going on in their life, and I do thank them quite a bit for contacting us, of course, and purchasing a shirt. And, you know, you could be hounded. If you could purchase a shirt and be hounded by me to your day's end for a phone call for me to hound you even more.
Right.
But if you want to help out the show and not be hounded by us, you could click on our Amazon link at the top of the page and purchase to your heart's content. Anything and everything in the world exists on Amazon. Buyer beware with some of those third-party sellers is all I'm saying. I've run into some concerns. But if you do purchase through any purchase that you make will help us immensely. Some of the notable purchases this past week through our Amazon click-through include someone purchased an Epson high-capacity ink cartridge. Someone also purchased the top-load pennant holders, the BCW company that makes bags and backs and boxes for comic books. Apparently also make fancy displays for sport team pennants as well.
Ooh, nice.
Someone also purchased the two-disc collection of Father of the Bride and Father of the Bride 2.
Ooh, somebody's getting married.
Mm-hmm. Or someone's a big Martin Short and or Lowe's Ice Creams fan.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Someone also purchased an Argon Tableware 6-cup Italian-style stovetop espresso coffee percolator.
Ooh, for percolating.
Now, I have one of these. I don't have the 6-cup version. I only have the 1-cup version. You know, make a one-hitter for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's a complicated device for a dum-dum like me.
Does it have a, if it gets up over 145, do you have to throw the Johnson bar?
No, what it's, so, to explain what it is, it comes in like, initially it's like two pieces. It kind of looks like what you would think an old school coffee pot looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the top, like, or it unscrews in the middle, right?
Right.
And there's like a little basin thing with a bunch of holes in it. That's where you put your coffee grounds.
Mm-hmm.
You put that underneath the top part. You put the water in the bottom. And then you screw everything back together. And then you put it on your open burner on the top of your stove. Turn it to high. And then don't be an idiot and touch the thing.
Gee, I wonder if anybody I know did that.
Multiple times. And it may have had to have been hidden from me.
Oh, boy. Well, let me ask you a question. Does this percolator have a trap door in the bottom that you can get rid of the crumbs?
No. When you take all the pieces apart after it's cooled down. After it's cooled down, Todd.
Right, cool down. Let it cool down first.
You just take that part off that has the grounds in it, and it's like literally like one tap on the garbage can, and it's clean.
Ah, if you're not taking care of your second degree burns.
Right, exactly. Like I typically was and am.
Right. I know what I'm getting you next week, some salve.
I was going to say some oven mitts.
Yeah, some mitt. That Infinity Gauntlet oven mitt that bursts into flames. Remember that?
I do. They actually have, there's a company that sells silicone, those like fancy silicone-based like pot holders and whatever. Mm-hmm. They make oven mitts, but they're Pac-Man.
Oh.
So that, those are cool. I would just have them for day-to-day wear. I wouldn't use them to take hot things out of the oven.
That's right, because your hands won't have a Pac-Man fever then. They won't get hot.
Right. So, Todd, did we have any Art Attack this week?
Yes, we did. Listener of the show, Euronymous, sent in a that he got from C2E2, a Japanese splatter technique drawing that he cannot remember the artist who did it. But if anybody was at C2E2 this year, I think they were in alphabetical order this year, and he was next to David Mack. So if you remember who was next to David Mack, and he had some of that splatter art, that's who it was.
Right, but that's a really cool piece. Euronymous is a friend of the show, nearing ultra mega mass power listener status, almost.
Mm-hmm. Almost.
He'll ask what he has to do to get there.
He has to start giving me some of his art.
I'm easy
to get along with.
That was Todd who said that.
Right.
Now, Todd, do we have anything in the mailbag this week?
Yes, we do. We had one thing from Kevin Ford, I believe.
All right.
Talking about you. Wasn't there an email from Kevin Ford?
You're supposed to read it.
Oh, am I supposed to read that one?
Yes.
I forgot we were doing that so quickly, and I had my phone open to the the Art Attack. I can only do one thing at a time, Joe.
So I'll read this one.
I got it open now.
All right, go ahead.
Dear sirs, I think Joe gets stupider every year. Yours, Professor Lawrence Pierce of University of Chicago.
Well, that's not really a question there, Professor, but we'll let the viewers decide.
Oh, boy.
Not a pre-worked out bit between me and Kevin.
Not a pre-worked out bit between me and Joe, because I messed it up.
Now, we also have a mailbag follow-up, I guess, from a friend of the show and winner of the 2017-18 Pigskin Pick'ems, Ron Sklodowski.
Great last name.
So he had the information to us. You know, obviously he had asked for some suggestions, but he also said he had a ton of stuff to read on his back catalog, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he threw that out to us and kind of saying to us, you know, what should he read things in order of, I guess. You know, he lists everything. I'm not going to read everything, but he says that he's gotten the list down some. He tries to do the smaller stuff first, since those are current titles, and then the older books like Flash and Punisher, he could do at any time. He's currently in the middle of Black Science, and then he'll be starting Saga here shortly. He then also asks if we have any Marvel recommendations. He says the only book he currently gets is Punisher. He was getting X-Men and Magneto, but he kind of fell off from those. He picked up the more recent stuff, Blue and Gold, and I'm guessing maybe Red here if that's out already. And again, he ended up seeing how much stuff he had in his back catalog and decided against it.
Right.
So, of course, looking at what he has, you know, I know he had suggested not going with some of the older stuff, of course. Being in the midst of Black Science and Saga, I would get up to date with those, of course.
Right.
And then of what he has here, just of my own personal, you know, I guess, feelings or what have you, I would go with the Geoff Johns Flash stuff.
As soon as I saw that, I totally agree.
Yeah. And as for Marvel recommendations, you know, you're reading a lot of stuff here. You know, back catalog, current catalog, whatever it is, I would definitely look at some of these writers, you know, that are writing some of the stuff that you see keep coming up on your piles. You know, Brian K. Vaughan has done a lot of stuff at Marvel. You know, you want to get back catalog stuff. If you're looking for newer stuff, there's no better recommendations, I think, right now at Marvel than the Jason Aaron Thor book or the Donny Cates Doctor Strange book.
I would throw Thanos into the mix, but yes.
Yep, Thanos, you know, those are kind of more recent. Like, obviously, Thor is going to have a lot more to catch up on, because Jason Aaron's been on that book for the better part of 5 years. But with the two Donny Cates books, Thanos and Doctor Strange, they're only about 3 issues into their run, so you could hop on those relatively quickly. So again, Ron, thank you very much for contacting us and contributing to the mailbag. Now we have one last bit before we do the winners for our Marvel Puzzle Quest contest. And that is going to be kind of a movie TV talk. Now, if you listened to After Dark last week, you know I've had some, you know,
I had a recent death in the family, and that's kind of been taking up a lot of my time, a lot more of my time than I would have wanted to, and obviously being in that sort of headspace, I wasn't in the mood to be watching the dark and gritty Punisher TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And with The Flash coming back this week, unfortunately, we're capping Punisher at 2 episodes, sadly.
Who had the over-under at 3?
Yeah, I don't know. You win the office pool who gathers around the old-timey radio and listens to this show when it comes out every Wednesday. But we have Flash coming back, of course, and Black Lightning also started as well. I know Todd has stated that he is going to definitely be watching that. I'm definitely going to give it a try, of course. My schedule permitting, I will have Flash and whatever movie Todd assigns to me with this week's After Dark.
Right.
So the last bit of business, did I forget anything else?
No, I can't think of anything. If we did forget, I forgot too.
Okay, so the last bit of business is our Marvel Puzzle Quest contest. Where the nice people at D3, the makers of the Marvel Puzzle Quest game, are giving to you, three of our listeners, a cover for the newly released Kraven character, along with the appropriate in-game currency hero points to roster said character to your team. Now, that has been the extent of my involvement with this. That is why Todd is the one who is choosing the three winners from everyone who submitted their pitches as to why Todd should play the game. Obviously, I'm a little bit more closely tied to not only the game itself, but also the community around the game, and by me absolving myself from any of the picking of said winner, removes any bias that I may have toward any of the winners of the contest.
Right.
Todd is unaware of the names of people that I speak to in or out of game. Obviously he's aware, you know, the folks who, do the Puzzle Warriors 3 podcast as part of the soon to be named network, but outside of Craig, who's actually been a guest on the show, I don't think Todd knows the other two guys, on the show.
Yeah, no, I don't. So,
right. So this has been given to Todd. So it's given to the actual folks who actually made the best pitches to get Todd to play. So, Todd, to you, sir.
All right. The first one is some names I don't have. Some I just have their game title. You know what I mean?
Their in-game name, sure.
Right. So the first one was an email to the Longbox Heroes account, and his name was Antonio Cruz. And I really like – he's from Peru, by the way. So we have a listener from Peru. Who made a wonderful effort and actually did a thoughtful reasons for me to play the game. He's probably never really listened to the show, but I thought it was nice. And he was like, here's four really big things that like all of them. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to read the email because they're like legitimately like, oh, they have competitions and stuff like that. I was like, a real thoughtful email. Somebody actually, put down like why you should play the game. That was the first one.
And
the
did it in a serious manner.
Right. So I was like, okay, you tried. The second one was also another email from, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's Graham Racenti. And he wrote, this is what I'm going to read. It's not that long. He's like, Marvel Puzzle Quest is a great game that offers a rewarding experience that enriches the lives of anyone who plays it. The game features all your favorite characters and gives you a chance to envision teams and battles that comics will likely never provide. The game rewards are enjoyable, even for a free player, and the prices are reasonable if you want to save yourself from grinding with very little gameplay. It's time to really enjoy. Okay, I got away from them long enough to tell the truth. I've only got a few minutes before D3 finds me again. Run. Run from this game. It will sap your life and take away the ones you love. I used to have a majestic head of hair, and I was almost a foot taller. My life force is now powering the very gems that their force me to match them into rows of three. Oh, no, they're here. And I was like, okay, that was cute. Because I got a lot of don't ever play the game, but him like doing the whole thing that they were hunting him down that actually made me laugh. So, and his in-gamer name is Gimmer. So, and then the last one was actually on our website, was from in-game name George W., which has nothing to do with my political leanings while I picked him. But here's the pitch. Marvel Puzzle Quest is worth playing because no other game that I know of will you have a face team after team of Gamora, Rocket, and Groot, and Medusa. Then you still have to fight over and over and over again. On second thought, don't play this game, which had nothing to do with it. But this is the part. Also, I should get points because my parents are giant nerds, and my middle name is Adric, which is probably one of the least liked companions in all of Doctor Who. And has legitimate heat with the Scarf Doctor. like
it's a shoot, brother?
Yeah, shoot. Like, literally, when he came on and they were, like, rehearsing scenes, he was giving some comforting suggestions to both the young actor and the director that, like, let's take this young mathematical genius from another planet and change it into a boy who was raised by animals and can't talk because he's such a bad actor.
Oh, my goodness.
So when he said Adric, I'm like, Doctor Who points all around. So those are the three that I've chosen. Interesting reasons why, but they are my reasons nonetheless.
So I have your in-game names. I'm going to pass them along to the good folks at D3. I also am going to post this on the Reddit forums as well, since that was where this got the most bit of traction. And I don't know how quickly they're going to get this in the prizes to you, but again, of course, please, give them some time,
mm-hmm.
To get the stuff to you, but obviously when they do get it to you, let us know, so we can, kind of close the loop on this whole contest.
Yep.
And, I think that's it. Again, thank you to everyone who participated, thank you for everyone who took the time to write something to convince or not convince Todd otherwise. And Todd, I want to apologize here for making you do work.
This is the most work I've done. In our first three episodes of this year, I've done more work than the last 370-some episodes.
Well, it ain't going to get any easier, Todd. It's going to be more and more work to get those numbers up.
Oh, I don't know if I want the numbers up anymore, Joe.
All right.
I'll work. I'll work just as hard as I feel I can. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Do you want to mass Twitter bomb some sponsors this week, or is that my turn in the barrel?
That's your turn in the barrel. My turn is on the couch while you edit this and put it up at midnight.
All right. So, everyone, thank you very much for listening to this week's episode number 382. About 382 Long Box Heroes. Thanks again to Jeff Lemire for taking time out of his busy day to be on the show. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll see y'all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.